America looks a lot like the Israel that Habakkuk the prophet had to deal with. Things are bad and getting worse. The prophet's dialogues with God reveal a man wrestling with how God could seemingly be out of touch with how tough things really were. Today we'll get into the heart of the prophet's complaint as we learn lessons on praying during dark times. Stay with us. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today we continue a series on the triumph of unanswered prayer. Turn to the small book of Habakkuk as Erwin Lutzer talks again about what to do when the answer is disaster. Listen to the prophet's complaint.
How can you stand this travesty of your law being maligned by us as a nation? And how can you stand all this when you are of such pure eyes that you find it difficult to even look at evil, though you know that it exists? That's the question. So Habakkuk spills out his soul to God, and he pours it all out and says, I don't understand. Well, if you're following us, you know that so far we've looked at the prayer of Habakkuk, the perplexity of Habakkuk, and now the posture. I like it every once in a while when all of the sequences in my message actually begin with the same letter, and it worked out this time. I don't do that too often, but occasionally. The posture of the prophet. Chapter 2, verse 1. I will take my stand at the watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint. The imagery there is of a man who's on a rampart. He is looking into the distance to see if any enemy is coming into the city. And what he does is continue to stare because he wants to be the first who's going to see it. And in the very same way, Habakkuk is saying, I'm going to stand here on tiptoes in reverence. I am going to stand here because whatever God says, I want to make sure that I get it right, and I can hardly wait to hear what he's going to say. So God begins to speak, and God says, Habakkuk, I want you to write down the vision. And you say, well, did he do it? Yeah, that's this book. You'd say, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could stand on the wall of the city and see God and see what God is saying? Well, just read the word. And when you read the word, you get what God is saying. You'll notice verse 2, the Lord answered me, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. That's going to be critical in a moment. Verse 4. Behold, his soul, that is the soul of the unrighteous, is puffed up. It is not upright in him, but the righteous shall live by his faith. Okay. Very famous verse, by the way, quoted 3 times in the New Testament. The righteous one shall live by faith. But I want to ask at this point, faith in who? Well, we know that that is faith in God, but faith for what? Faith for what? Times are hard. We're in an economic crisis. There are those who experience sickness and poverty, and we are in a desperate state as a nation, morally and spiritually. So I want to know what I should have faith in God for. Hang on to that. What follows now in the next chapter is not a direct answer to Habakkuk's question as much as it is that God is affirming judgment for all who are wicked. Of course, we need to simply point this out. There are 5 woes that God gives in answer to Habakkuk's prayer and question. Verse 6, woe to him who heaps up what is not his own. Verse 9, woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high, to be safe from the reach of harm. Woe to that person. We're living at a time when there are many people involved in a mortgage crisis. And I understand that part of the problem is predatory lenders who knew right well that those people could not pay, but because they were making money, they signed them up anyway. Woe to those who gets evil gain for his house to set his nest on high, saying, as long as I'm okay, I don't care about anybody else. Woe to them. Verse 12, woe to him who builds a town with blood. Verse 14 says that the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord. Verse 15, woe to him who makes his neighbors drink. All right. Verse 19, woe to him who says to a wooden thing, awake. Woe to idolaters. What is God saying here? God is saying, Habakkuk, you have to get one thing clear, okay? You have to understand this. It is not as if the violence in the land or the violence of the Chaldeans that they are going to bring upon the land, and they did, it is not as if wicked people of any stripe, of any religion, of any country, are ever going to get by. I know what's going on, and my standard of judgment and holiness has not changed one iota. What you must understand, Habakkuk, is that I am on a different timetable than you are. It's a different timetable. Give me time. Did you notice that the vision talks about the time appointed? And we say to ourselves, I want justice, and I want it today, preferably at least by tonight. And God says, I have my own timetable. In fact, there's a verse in Ecclesiastes that can be roughly translated this: because the judgment against sin is not executed immediately, people think it is safe to do evil. I'm not getting caught, they say. I made my money, perhaps unrighteously, perhaps by cutting corners, but I got by, my friends got by, everybody's doing it, and God is doing nothing. God says to Habakkuk, I am doing something, and keep in mind, I know exactly what is happening, and judgment will come. When Habakkuk hears about God's sovereignty and God's judgment, he says finally in verse 20, but the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. Earlier in the first chapter, he said, oh God, how can you be silent when all this is going on in the world? And now he begins to back up and to say, now it is my turn to be silent. As a matter of fact, it is the turn of the entire world to know that God is in his temple, and in his presence our mouths have to be closed. We might not understand his ways, but it's all under his control. So notice that we have moved now, and we have moved from the idea of his prayer to his perplexity to his position. And now I'd like to talk about his praise. We're going to go through the text, then I'm going to tell you what's going on, and then your life is going to be changed forever. You'll never be the same if you are open to what God has to say to you today through his word. He goes on in chapter 3, and he prays that in wrath God would remember mercy, last part of verse 2. And then beginning at verse 3 and going on, he begins to talk about what God has done in the past. As he's contemplating the works of God, the splendor of the heavens, verse 4, his brightness was like the light, rays flashed from his hand. Before him, verse 5, there went pestilence and plague followed at his heels. He scattered mountains. You can look through this yourself and see the wonderful hyperbole that Habakkuk has regarding what God is doing. Most commentators believe that what he's really talking about is the deliverance of the children of Israel from Egypt. You know, it talks about the seas and the rivers opening and the pestilence that came upon Egypt and so forth. And Habakkuk here is lost in wonder when he looks at the past and begins to think what God has done. And then we conclude, you'll notice it says, verse 16 of chapter 3, I hear and my body trembles. My lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones. My legs tremble beneath me. Don't you feel that way when things go bad and when we read the headlines? Yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble to come upon the people who have invaded us. I am willing now to have patience, to let God do it on His schedule and His agenda and not mine. So that's what he's emphasizing. And then this book ends with this unbelievable, almost surprising burst of praise. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herds in the stalls, yet will I rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on high places. And then he ends with a note to Jerry Edmonds. It says right here, to Jerry Edmonds, the choir master with stringed instruments. That's right. It's right there. This apparently was sung. This was sung. What's going on? What's the connection between what Habakkuk is learning about God and suddenly this great burst of admiration and praise? What's the connection? How can we move from all these questions to praising God? How can we make that transition? That's the question.
Well, my friend, today this is Pastor Lutzer, and I'm so glad that you have joined us. And I hope that you indeed tune in next time so that you can understand the connection. In the next message, we will connect the dots and help you to better understand how it is that Habakkuk went from deep despair and questions to amazing faith, a willingness to commit himself to God and believe that no matter what were to come, no matter what comes, he'd be able to have confidence in God. It's a transformation that you and I need to have. I've entitled the message, When the Answer is Disaster, because that's exactly what happened to this prophet. And yet in the midst of unanswered prayer, even in the midst of unanswered questions, God did something marvelous and wonderful in the prophet's heart. Well, I want to thank you today for those of you who stand with us with your gifts, with your prayers, with your partnership, because we need you. God has seen fit to bless the ministry of Running to Win, but it's because of people like you who help us during these critical times. Also, as I often mention, you'll be receiving information in just a moment as to how these messages can become yours, so you can listen to them again, share them with your friends, spread the word that God is faithful even in unanswered prayer.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer with more of When the Answer is Disaster, the fourth message in a 6-part series on the triumph of unanswered prayer. Tomorrow, more on seeing our disasters as being under the control of God. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. As a help in working through unanswered prayer, this series will be sent on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Join us for tomorrow's Running to Win.